Welcome back to The New Exchange, a podcast series that explores how everyone has a story to tell. My name is Kent Grandpierre, and the chat you're about to hear today is with a ridiculously talented individual who goes by the moniker Toby. Hailing from both Lagos, Nigeria and Brampton, Canada, Toby is a different kind of artist in a multitude of ways. A true student to the craft of hip-hop, Toby is a rapper who's paradoxically both a traditionalist and a rebel when it comes to his art. His songs have the potent lyricism that speaks to an overwhelming love of hip-hop's origins and forefathers, but it's really an artful way that he's also carving out his own path. And if you've ever listened to this podcast before, then you've probably already guessed it, Toby is carving his own path in his own way. His latest album, Panic, showcases this in spades, where throughout the album's runtime, he's rapping about battling anxiety, depression, maneuvering around the world as a black man, and he's doing all this while doing what expert songwriters do best. He leaves enough room for you as a listener to insert your own feelings, your own traumas, and your own experiences into the music. And oh, I should also mention that Panic won 2 Juno Awards this year for Best Rap Album and Best Rap Single. For those unaware, the Junos are the Canadian equivalent of the Grammys. This talk was a long time coming. Throughout my career, I've been very fortunate to have worked closely with many acts from Canada. And what happens with that is that despite Canada's size as a country, the music scenes are relatively tight-knit. I've talked about it on the podcast before, but basically all the players of the various genres of music in Canada hang out and cross-pollinate amongst each other. That comes up in our chat, and man, again, I am so excited for you to hear this one. Beyond being a supremely talented artist, Toby is also a deeply thoughtful guy. He's a person who cares a lot about the world, the people in it, and something you quickly notice when hearing him speak is how little of an ego he has, which in turn allows him to spread his message far and wide. He just wrapped up a long US and European run with Mick Jenkins. It's wild, actually. We recorded this talk a few months before that tour kicked off. And yeah, after you hear this talk, be sure to check out the song that Toby and Mick released together called Forgot We Were Seeds. You're listening to the New Exchange podcast, and this is my talk with Toby. So I was saying this just before I hit the recorder, but this has been one of those talks that's been a long time coming because of the mutual friends we have in music. And yeah, man, I have to say, I've been loving your art for quite a while now.
Ken, man, thank you so much. That really means a lot, man.
Yeah, I know this will be a very basic way to start, but something I wanted to explore with you right at the start is how almost in all your bios, it highlights that you make unapologetic soul music. And I'd love to hear from your own words, like what that descriptor means to you, especially when you hear it said back to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it makes me happy for it to be said back to me. Because when that term first came into my mind, it wasn't like a brainstorm session, you know, it wasn't like how do I define my sound? You know, it was intuitive, it was easy, you know, and to me, that's what songwriting is about. Like, it's not supposed to be difficult. It's supposed to be easy because you're channeling something that is beyond, you know, that's beyond us, you know. That's how I feel.
That's such a good way to put it. You know, it almost kind of makes it sound like, obviously there's a multitude of factors that can make something difficult, but it almost makes it sound like if it's too difficult, maybe you have to explore how honest you're being within yourself in the process of writing something.
Exactly. And the intentions, absolutely.
That word is like, We're making the season right now that you're in the middle of, and that's a word that's been coming up a lot, but I've been feeling very grateful for it because you can't overstate the importance of it.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yeah. So you moved to Canada from Lagos, Nigeria, I think when you were 9 years old, right?
Yeah, 8, 9. Yeah.
Yeah. And I bring it up because, you know, that is such a significant time to move somewhere, especially a place that's so different. Like, when you reflect on that in life thus far, how do you feel about that move and having those two points of upbringings? Like, because I imagine that must have influenced you creatively.
100%. You know, I'd always considered myself somewhere in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, you know, not fully in Africa and not fully in North America, you know, just like in this stranded place in between two cultures. But I think the place where I'm at now is I don't see myself as that anymore. I see myself as a total human being that is comprised of both of those places. You know what I'm saying? So I have parts of Lagos in me. I have parts of Toronto in me. And now I have parts of LA, New York, and London in me too, you know? So how I interpret those places and their influence on me.
That's a beautiful answer. And, you know, it kind of treads nicely into highlighting the Nigeria portion, like in terms of what I'm about to say next, because, man, Nigeria has been having a moment, and it feels like a movement. And I mean, it's been going on for several years now, because I think about acts like Wizkid and Burna Boy, obviously, but something that's meant a lot mm-hmm. to me. So my background is I'm American, but I grew up a bit in the UK. And in mm-hmm. the 90s, it wasn't common for British artists to rep their heritage. And and that's changed a lot in the last like 7-8 years. And acts I love like Skepta, Dave, Miss Banks, I mean, they're very open about the importance of their Nigerian roots and how it plays a major role in their craft. And I bring all this up because I'd love to know, in reference to you, how's it felt to see that happen? Of seeing Nigerians waving a flag in places like the UK, US, and Canada, where maybe just a couple years ago they weren't.
I mean, to me, it means everything, you know? Nigeria as a republic is only, 60 years old, you know? It's a very young republic. And to see the contributions that we've made all across the globe is something that I'm immensely proud of. And, you know, I remember when Lil Wayne said, you know, tougher than Nigerian hair, and all the kids in high school was like, oh, that's you? You know what I'm saying? And now it's like, yeah, you know, that is me. You feel me? Like, you know, for me, it's like, it's a sense of pride. And it's a sense of camaraderie, too. Anytime I see somebody and I'm like, oh, we share a heritage, you know, I respect that. So,
man, big ups. I'm trying to think. Do you know the UK, of the UK presenter named Julie Adenuga? I think she was like an Apple.
Of course.
Yeah, I think she's Nigerian, too, right?
Skepta's sister.
Yeah.
She's Skepta's sister.
Oh, yeah, that's right. She's Skepta's sister. I've been a fan for a minute. I just remember, yeah, of course she's Nigerian. She also waves the flag. And that was just another thing that popped up in my head. I'm going to bring up something about Canada. But before I do, I was just going to note, I mean, we're only doing the audio here, but you can see I'm wearing Arkell's shirt right now.
Oh, you're tapped in.
Yeah. Well, it was a funny thing. I was with those guys a couple weeks ago. They were here in Brooklyn. And I mentioned to their manager, Ash, that I was going to be chatting with you. And I'm sure she's crossed paths with you, like in the Junos and stuff. But she was like, oh, that Toby guy is so fucking cool. Like, she said it like it was the first thing that she said. So,
well, listen, I got a lot of love for the Arkells, man. Their lead singer, he made a special birthday video for one of my close friends because she loves the Arkells. And it was like the sweetest thing ever, man. Like, man, those guys, they're Canadian heritage for sure.
Yeah, big ups to Max. Big ups to Max. That's so beautiful.
Shout out to Max, man.
Yeah.
He's a real one.
He's a real one. This would also be a good time to give a shout out to my homie, someone who's very much like a sister to me, the one and only Havaya Mighty. And funny enough, it's relevant because it's the way I got into your music, because I first heard of you through that now legendary 24 Toronto music remix. And you...
Ooh.
Yeah, and you two grew up in Brampton, right?
Yeah, we grew up in the B, man. I've known Havaya for like 10 plus years now.
Damn. I know it's an older song, but since it's the first time we're talking, and we're obviously going to talk about songs off your album, I think we got to talk about this because, man, it's a tune. I recently found myself, in preparation for this talk, listening to it again quite a bit. And I say this with all the respect in the world, but 24 Toronto Remix, it's a weird song. Like, it slaps. The rapping is amazing. It has all these like punky sonic textures. But what makes it a weird song is that it's hard when you listen to it and you try to separate pieces. It's hard to imagine all of them working together. Yet it does. Like, do you know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was a weird song to finish.
Why?
Well, I mean, because everybody on that song was in like a different place in the world. You know what I'm saying? So I did the song. I got the beat in New York from Day Trip. I recorded my part in Toronto, and then I got Havaya and Shad, thankfully, in the studio in Scarborough. Jazz Cartier recorded his verse in LA, but I was in the studio with him too. I was in the studio with all these guys when they're doing their parts.
Wow.
But they were in different places. And then Edgy on the guitar, him as well. So, you know, I'm like a quality control freak. You know, I like being on top of this shit. But it was a tough song to finish because there's so many people on it, you know?
Yeah. How do you feel like hearing that for me, for someone like me, and I'm sure for a couple people, that was my entryway, knowing it was that song? How does that make you feel?
I love that because, you know, I grew up on Posse Cuts, you know, I grew up on Wu-Tang, you know, I grew up on, like, you know, you would see Cameron, Jadakiss, you know, Fat Joe all on the same song, you know, I grew up on that shit, Northern Touch. So for me, like, I'm a artist, but I'm a rapper first, you know, so I like when other rappers can sharpen their sword with me, you know, iron sharpens iron.
Facts, big facts. I take it you're a Mobb Deep guy? You strike me as a Mobb Deep guy.
I fuck with Mobb Deep for sure, man.
That's what's up. All right. I would really love to get into Panic, your third album.
Absolutely. Rest in peace, Prodigy. Yeah.
Yeah, rest in peace, Prodigy. Yeah. Man, it has to be said, I don't know what it is fully, but I really do love talking to artists when it comes to their third album. It's actually been said, this is probably going to be either the third or the fourth time this has been brought up in this, like, one season we're doing right now, where the third album somehow becomes this bigger make or break thing for an artist, outside of numbers, outside of all that stuff. I'm talking purely creatively. And I wonder, is that how it felt when it came to making Panic to some degree? And I hope you, in a way, like, for the context, I feel like there's something about knowing you're doing a third album that's like, this is my chance to crystallize the artist I want to be.
You know what's interesting, my guy? I wouldn't even call this my third album.
Would you not?
I'd call it my second.
Oh, so you wouldn't consider... Okay, because is the one in between you consider more of a mixtape?
Yeah, because Elements, it didn't have the intention of me making it an album. It was my favorite Lucy songs that we put together.
Oh, okay. So now this is a question I'll have to ask you the next time we talk.
Exactly.
But you know, this is what's funny, and I'm going to keep this in. Like, there's editing, obviously, but I'm going to keep this in because what's nice is this pivot. See, the most obvious thing now to do and then do the typical thing of like, oh, well, you know, the sophomore slump, were you worried about that? But beyond that, like, outside of the context of how people think about such things, what was your headspace going into Panic then?
My headspace was, what's my mission statement as an artist? And my mission statement as an artist is to bring people of the world together, regardless of creed and ethnicity. And the liberation of oppressed people worldwide. That's what the whole album, I'm talking about that, is liberation. The sample on the second song is by a group called Sounds of Liberation. You know what I'm saying? So littered through the album, I'm weaving stories and even reference points of liberation. Some are overt and some are more subtle, but that's what it is, brother.
I mean, something that meant a lot to me, because, you know, I follow you on socials, and like, as I was listening to the album and the days and the weeks that I've followed, it's been really cool seeing how you've shed more light on, you know, the making of it, what it's meant to you. And one of the things that I love that you've put out into the world, because I feel like you hear it in the music, is like how throughout these songs, we're hearing this contrast between being introspective and like observing the world, and how the panic kind of correlates to all the madness that happens both out of us and within. And, you know, it's wild to think that you can have that as like something that you're focusing on, while also considering the aspect of liberation, while also considering the fact that you have your own personal journeys you're going through. I mean, it's like, it sounds like there was a lot of thinking in the context of just even writing these songs, you know?
Absolutely, my guy. Absolutely. And I'm a serial overthinker, textbook overthinker. And my remedy for overthinking is by overwriting, you know?
Really?
Absolutely. Absolutely. When my mind is filled with too many thoughts and I'm like, I feel like I'm in a state of like helpless paralysis, which thank goodness is not all the time. I just find that writing it out on paper and making sense of what I'm writing, fact checking myself, you know, that's why I love, like, I love, you know, journalism for that reason, because journalists are dedicated to facts, you know, so, and the truth. So that's what panic was for me. Synthesizing all those thoughts in my head and making it real.
Yeah. You know what I love about the correlation there is that, you know, a word like facts, I think a lot of the times people try to use that word outside of the context of the personal. But, you know, something that's been going on in my life recently is having conversations with friends about like relationships, not just romantic, but relationships in general. And where it's relative is that me and my friends have been discussing how one of the innate values of relationships is how it forces you to see your blind spots in a big way. But if you think about that word blind spots, it kind of correlates to what you're discussing in terms of facts, where it's like, when you talked about the overwriting there, it makes me think in correlation to you, you probably had times where you're like, yo, what are the facts about myself? And blind spots might be one of them, but also outside of that, like, what are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? It's like, there could be facts that correlate to your inner you.
Mm-hmm. 100%. 100%. And I'm not beyond critique. I wouldn't be a human being if I was over here criticizing systems and I somehow couldn't criticize myself and look at my blind spots, look at my flaws, look at my vulnerabilities, which are littered through that album.
Yeah, it is so bloody true, man.
I'm like, hey guys, here's my diary. Boom.
When you reflect on this body of work, right? I know it's going to sound like a simple question, but I'd love to hear it from you. Like, what's a song that you feel was the most difficult for you to either write or perform? I have an idea of what it was, but I mean, from a place of emotion where I'd argue that sometimes for artists, there are times where you know exactly what you want to say, but the act of doing so might be difficult. Does that correlate to something you experienced while making this?
100%, brother. I was watching this clip that says language is the ultimate reductor of human experience, meaning that you can feel something as a human being, but then as soon as you try to explain it with your words, you severely downgrade the actual experience, because words can't even serve the purpose of that feeling that you're experiencing in your body. You know what I'm saying? And I think communication is actually not my strong suit. I think I need to do a better job of communication, because I feel so many things on a daily basis. And I'm like, damn, how do I explain this in a way where people will see where I'm coming from and try and feel where I'm coming from, you know? And I think that's why I'm a musician. Because if I wasn't a musician, bro, I don't know how I'd be able to communicate any of these feelings.
It would be really bloody tough, I bet. But well, what's a song do you feel that reflects on that to you? A song that was difficult in that regard?
Keep From Falling, for sure.
That's the one all right. That's the one I thought it might be.
Oh, that's what you said?
Yeah. You can hear it, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Damn. Like, do you feel a sense of, I mean, obviously you must feel a sense of pride towards all the songs, but if you just take a second to reflect on the pride you feel towards that song, like, what are some of the thoughts and emotions that come to mind even when you think about the song?
For me, Keep From Falling is about universal, like, fear, you know, the fear of falling in love and everything that could potentially come from that, which is potential hurt, you know what I'm saying? Potential rejection, it could be anything. And I think that the person who will listen to that song and be like, I know exactly where Toby was at when he wrote this, would be like my ex-girlfriend. You know what I'm saying? Because she'd be like, yo, I was there. But yeah.
Man, I get the truth out of people. Fucking hell, man. Thank you for sharing that.
At this point. But you know, that's just human nature, you know? Like,
I didn't mean to cut you off. I was gonna say everyone can
Absolute. But now the sweetest joy is what happens when you fall, though. That's when you get the sweetest joy, because you've allowed yourself to experience the bliss of surrendering to love.
I was going to bring this up later on, but I'll bring it up now because you just said that, because it is kind of amazing to me that what you just said. So I'm in therapy as well, and I bring that up because one of the most fascinating things about going through therapy and working on yourself is when you hear someone else say something and you could correlate it to that. You're like, oh, there's someone else who's also doing that.
Yeah. It's beautiful, huh?
Yeah. It's wild because it's just like, I was just talking to a friend about this a few days ago because he was asking me what it's like. I was like, man, it's exhausting. He's like, why? It's like, I know how I feel all the time.
Right. I'm happy for you though, man.
Oh, thank you. It was a journey.
It's a beautiful process. I'm very happy for you, man.
Yeah, thanks, man. And you know, it is, it's not lost on me, the aspect of being a Black man, especially in America. It's like, the importance can't be understated in that regard too, yeah.
Damn. You gotta get yours, man. And by get yours, I mean, like, wholeness, clarity, fulfillment, like, if that's the one thing we can all do as human beings and strive to pursue in our lifetimes, that's literally all we need to do. We don't need to do it much more than that, than actualize, self-actualize.
Big facts, man. Big facts. I'm going to ask you more about therapy later on, but I wanted to just jump back on the album because, you know, I don't think I'll be pointing out anything new by saying this, and I'm sure you know this, but man, fucking Flowers is such a standout on the album. I mean, obviously big ups to Mavi on the track, but your flows here, it's just, that's fucking inspiring, that one, yeah?
Oh man, thank you, bro. I love that song. I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, man. I mean, tell me about the way crafting this track impacted the overall album, because I feel like what's cool about this one is like, we kind of hear flex of things that we hear throughout, and I wonder if this song played a particular role in the journey of Panic.
So it's interesting because that was one of the last songs that we did.
How is that always the case? That's so funny how that happens.
Well, I mean, I was growing. I was growing as a person. I've been working on this album for 4 years. So the person I was when we started, I'm not him anymore. At the core, yes, same person, but you know, I've grown so much, and that song is basically me checking my privilege, you know, checking my male privilege. And because I believe that women need allies, women need male allies, just like Black people need white allies, you know, just like, you know, anybody who's living under some modicum of oppression needs allyship from the dominant party, everybody. And that's how we work together. And that Flowers, I just played my little part, you feel me, in the verse. And so many women have come up to me and being like, yo, the mere fact that you mentioned that in the verse, the part about not feeling safe on road at night as a woman, they felt like validated, you know what I'm saying?
Big facts, man.
Yeah, brother.
It's, you know, that is, it's noteworthy of you bringing that up, because I will say, when I re-listen to the song and that part comes up, it, and this isn't to like judge other musicians at all, but it's like, it shocked me how much I hadn't heard that in music before, like how that was like, that felt so new to me. Even though that's something that so many people can resonate with, like even just that line.
Yeah, bro. I mean, that's some like, some people would say that's some like woke shit. You know what I'm saying? Oh, you're so woke.
But you're just speaking to reality. You're just like, yo, it's like, it's an, so far this talk has had nothing but undisputed facts. So you're bar none for that. It's just the fact that that's a reality of life.
Fam, it's just facts. Like, listen to Mavi's verse in there. Like, the when I was piecing Mavi's verse, you know, and he's like, oh, damn near interrogating himself. You know what I'm saying? And, but it's so beautiful. It's beautiful with the backdrop of Lady Ray's vocals saying, through it all, I can't complain. It feels so good. And I just feel like, damn, it's going to be all right. Everything is good. Like, we good. We got this shit. That's how I feel. We got this shit for real.
But by the way, I have to say, as a music fan, I really do appreciate the way you paid it. And you, the way I could tell you clearly paid attention to track listing, to the track list of this, because the structure, because man, I fucking love the way how Flowers ends and goes right into Flatline. Like, oh my God, man.
Yeah, my God.
It's so good, man. So good.
Yeah. It's like a, you leave this like euphoric state with the strings, and then boom, crash.
Boom.
Let's go.
I always love that. Shout out to Kenny Mason on Flatline. Like, that's a tune.
Shout out to Kenny Mason. Also, I got to give a big shout out to Alex Goose, the executive producer of the album, and my guys, David Lee and John Tanners, man. Like, man, we were like the four horsemen when it came to this. Like, every piece of the album, from the samples to the structure to the vocals in there, like, they saw it all the way through with me. So big ups to them.
That is so cool, man. That's so cool. You know, funnily enough, I mentioned at the top of the talk some of the Canadian people we have in common with, like, you know, Arkells, Havaya, and Shad. But we also have a New Yorker in common. Well, he was living in New Jersey. He does live in New York now. He does. The one and only Topaz Jones. He's one of my favorite people.
Topazy!
Yeah. I love that guy. And man, like, man, yeah, I love that dude. I love that dude, man.
Topaz is a real one, man. Man, I'm a fan for life, bro.
I could this kind of ties to why I brought it up. And well, first, I could tell. I love hearing that because I could tell. Because look, I respectfully, like, your album is full of jewels, but I feel like All Night Long is like the crown jewel of this thing, man.
Well, guess what? That was the very last song that we put on the album.
Damn.
Very last one. So shout out to Topaz, man. I love how that song came about, man. Thank you.
Man, because, yeah, beyond the song, and this I'm kind of, like, filling up with, like, happiness hearing you, like, seeing how you've shifted, like, with just Topaz being brought up, because I deeply love the fact that you and him found each other as artists, because I remember when I saw the post about the song, immediately I was like, okay, yes, this makes sense, and I even think of his project, Don't Go Telling Your Mama, like, thinking of, like, what I know about you as an artist, I could see you fucking with that, like, a lot, too.
Oh, I love that album. I love the visuals. I love his community, you know. Yeah, man, that's one of those guys that, like, you know, for the rest of his career, like, you know, I got his back, you feel me? Like, that's how I am, man. When I connect with an artist on, like, a not just a personal level, but on, like, on music level, it's like, yo, whatever you need, man.
Yeah.
Let's get it.
Yo, that's what's up, man. That's what's up. I know it'd be an obvious thing to ask, so I want to be, like, very particular about how I ask it. When you guys connected, you were already a fan, so you knew what it was like. Like, did it take you by surprise that you guys connected so much, like, beyond music? Or, like, how did that feel for you? Like, when you actually got to meet him and it's like, oh, I'm vibing with this guy. What was that like?
Nah, I knew we were on the same frequency already because I listened to his lyrics, the intention behind it. You know when you see somebody and you're like, yo, I know we're on the same frequency? Because then the first time I ever met him was at his show. I went to his show in LA. I literally bought the ticket last minute. I just drove over there. I went by myself.
Damn.
And I'm chilling in the back and I'm seeing all my, I saw mad friends over there. I'm like, okay, so I'm in the right place. And then we linked up afterwards and we're like, yo, let's get in the studio. And my producer, Alex Goose, was there too. That shit was serendipitous, man. We got in the studio the next week.
Damn.
Yeah, brother. It was that simple. It's supposed to be simple.
It really should, honestly. Because you know what? I always feel for musicians in the sense that, like, beyond all the stuff that you have to think about with, like, stats and marketing and just, like, logistics, at the end of the day, all you really want to do is think about the craft. And when you get to have those moments, it's like, all right, this is why the thing is happening.
100%. And I've been getting so many of those moments recently, bro, that I'm just, it's like alchemy. I'm just using it to fuel. I'm like an electric vehicle. You know what I'm saying? I'm just using it to keep going. Like a hybrid.
I love that. This is also gonna be, this is an aside. Like, I have more stuff to ask you, but I just wanted to bring up, I have no question or doubt that this is gonna happen, but I really hope you get a lot of sync deals in your future for Time Out, because what a fucking song, dude.
Bro, I hope so too.
I feel, by the way, I gotta say, I think you were a little sneaky on that one, because, like, the song with Topaz makes a lot of sense, but I remember when I listened to Time Out, there was, like, some pockets where I was like, all right, Topaz could have gone on here, but I felt like you were probably like, nah, son, this is
me. Yo, that's hilarious. That's hilarious.
Oh, yo, you're flexing on that one hard, man. Is that a fave for you as well?
Man, that was one of my favorite songs to make, man. My favorite songs are the ones that feel like water falling from the sky. It just happened. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
That song just happened. The hook, I don't even remember writing it. I think I just freestyled it. I'm like, where did this come from?
It's been a while since it's been brought up, so I could bring it up. There's well, funny enough, I brought up Shad earlier. So when Shad was on Q, I remember he interviewed Noel Gallagher, the guitarist from Oasis, years and years ago.
Yeah.
And Noel Gallagher said something that has always stuck with me, because he said it was in correlation to songwriters in general. And he was saying how, like, there's this big belief amongst all songwriters that some songs out there are already written and you have to find them. It's almost like fishing and you have to fish them out. So that's kind of what always comes to mind.
I love it.
Yeah.
Noah's right. He is right. I don't know where these songs be coming from, but they just come and you just got to be there ready to catch it.
Yeah, you have to be there ready for the, it's that whole thing where talent always gets you as far as preparation does. You got to be prepared to, like, execute.
100%, brother. 100%.
Yeah. I have a handful, like, two more things I wanted to bring up to you. The next thing, really much, I mean, you could tell I wanted to talk to you because of your music and I'm a fan and everything, but there's a bigger thing I wanted to talk to you about, because I really appreciate how you use your words. Like, even in the context of this conversation, like, it means a lot. I love how you use your platform and your mind. And after following you for a while, I could tell that intentionality is so important. So I saw this post that you put up recently about, like, I think it was like Kohler magazine you talked to, or Kohler? And it was brought up about, like, how there was a period where you donated free therapy to people. And, you know, it's one thing to do that, to think about doing that, but to actually put pen to paper. Like, can you speak to what that meant to you? Like, because it's, you know, that had to have affected you, getting to be there for people and also reflect on, you know, what you have even gone through.
Absolutely. I think when people ask me, you know, what are you most proud of as an artist, you know, they may expect me to say, like, this award or this accolade, but it was being able to literally fund people's therapeutic journeys into becoming more whole human beings. And shout out to my team, man. You know, my team, they know how important this is for me. Since I started working with them. So at every junction, they've always kept their eyes open to opportunities where we can use the platform for good and help other people, you know? So I'm very grateful for that. I'm a very lucky person.
Yeah, it's beautiful, man. It's beautiful. And like, you know, obviously, you know what? Yeah, well, is it obvious? Maybe it's obvious. I think it's one of those things that like when people I found therapy at a time in my life where it wasn't inaccessible at all in the context of where I'm at in life and what's going on. But there was a period of time where it was, like years and years ago, broke college student and all that. And it's times like that and things like this that really make you think about how powerful it is for people to recognize that when you get rid of the barrier of access, it's just like life just opens up so much differently to you in different avenues, especially in the context of having the ability to work on yourself. If anything, it's like a long round way to say it, but I imagine so many of those people that you got to help out in this regard, once the barrier of access was gone, they were like, oh, wow, like I can do this. That's where I think it's probably meaningful as well.
My man, you hit the nail on the head. If I had the resources and the means to have therapy much earlier than I did, I would have been on this journey much sooner. You know what I'm saying? I didn't really get into it until I was working full time and I had benefits, you know? So, and even with the benefits, paid out of pocket because I could afford it. So to your point about barrier to access, that's really the key, is trying to remove those barriers to access as much as possible or subsidize it for folks, you know? And that's why I have a deep respect for social workers. I have a deep respect for subsidy programs, because what people don't realize or what people don't talk about enough, especially in like, you know, corporate world, is these aren't handouts. It's not a handout. It's actually helping the overall population by removing these barriers to access. It's a net positive effect on everybody.
Yeah, even the people who don't benefit from it. Like the legit, who don't tangibly benefit something from it. It does benefit society at large, exactly.
Yeah, 100%. And to me, that's what frustrates me the most about watching some politicians on TV that choose to like demonize whole populations or, you know, try this us versus them tactic. It's like, it's not us versus them. It's us. It's literally all us. You know what I'm saying? It's all us. There's no them. The them is an illusion.
Man, I feel you so hard on that. And what I think is so interesting about where we are now and where we're continuing to go as people, like in the context of America, Canada, and I mean the world at large, but just in the places that we have view to, is that it is shifting, you know? Like it's kind of like, I think we're living in a time where that us versus them narrative is not dead yet, but it's on its way out. Like the more that people try to perpetuate that, the more you kind of see the emperor in the fake clothes, like that whole thing.
Right. And I'm glad that you mentioned that, because through conversations like this, it's a mind virus. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. You know what I'm saying? Once you see just how there's no them and it's literally just all us, it's impossible to unsee it. And I hope that isn't a scary thing. I hope it's inspiring. You know what I mean? And I think it will be. I think so.
I think it will be too. The last thing I wanted to bring up to you, and it requires me to tell you a story.
Let's get it.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. Because coming up next for you is a big tour you'll be doing with Mick Jenkins.
Mick, yeah.
Man, oh man. And again, similar to Topaz in regards to how I feel about your art, like another example of you getting to chop it up with an artist that I feel that you have like this shared vision and ethos and drive with. Like, I feel like when I saw that announcement again, I was like, that makes so much sense.
Dude, that makes me happy, man.
Yeah?
That makes me happy.
Oh, well, I'll tell you the story.
All right.
I saw Mick the first time I saw Mick, I saw him open up for Cimino a few years ago, and I had no idea who he was, but I went with my girlfriend at the time, and I bring that up because after the show, we were living together, and after the show, we went back to our place, and when we got back home, I stayed up a few hours into the night, immersing myself into Mick's music, to the annoyance of my girlfriend at the time. I remember the next morning, she was like, did you, like, stay up? Listen to this dude's music. And I was like, yo, did you not see him? He was like, fucking amazing. And
yeah, right.
All this to say, I'm really excited for you when it comes to this tour.
Man, bro, I love that story, man. Mick is one of those artists that has helped me push my pen, like, over the years. You know what I'm saying? Like, when I think of this generation's finest writers, is Mick is really up there. Like, he's really up there, man. And yeah, it's the waters, man, like pieces of a man, like the catalog is deep.
It's deep, man. It's deep. And the reason I brought all this up, I mean, obviously to, you know, share a bit of myself too, but like in context of this tour coming up, you know, beyond the crowds, what's something you're deeply looking forward to when it comes to that tour?
I'm looking forward to Europe, man. I'm looking forward to seeing how people in Europe that may be culturally, you know, culturally different, how they interpret the music. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've noticed in Europe, they love hip hop. They love rap. And I want to know why.
Yeah. No, I know what you're talking about. So I've toured a bit, and I've been to Europe a fair bit because of that. And I will say, in reference to what you're talking about, obviously hip-hop is big here in the States, but in the context of Europe, there is a way where they're... Here in the States, I feel like sometimes it could be a bit passive in terms of how people interact with things, but over there, in the context of hip-hop, there's something that's a bit more interactive and active that is kind of, like, unique.
Do you have any semblance of why that is?
I do. And I'll say this. So that way it doesn't, like, it's not you saying this. It's me. It's a me thing. It's for as much diversity as there are in places like Brussels and Paris and London, a lot of these countries are very homogenous beyond that and kind of overwhelmingly so. And I think here in the States, there is some of that too with like the percentage points of our population. But I think in Europe, because the countries are so much smaller, there's a lot more of a separation of what the Black experience in a place like Canada or the States could be. So I think even though amongst all that, there are obviously like all these countries everywhere in the world has their own problems. There's undoubtedly people who have voices who kind of want to just like, you know, keep things homogenous. I think what you see naturally is a lot of people in these places go like, I have no clue what it's like to be a Black American or a Black Canadian, but that must be important because of the passion that's coming through this art. Like, I think there's that humanistic side that people find important, but when you see someone expressing themselves, it kind of puts it in your face as opposed to making it feel like it's so far away.
Wow, that, I get where you, I see it.
Yeah, I was, yeah. And it's like, it's no shade to Europe at all. It's almost like saying, like, look how great you guys are that you even want to know more.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because I've never thought it was the love that I see online from these, you know, these like European kids that be in my DMs. I'm like, why are they so like more eager than people out here? And I think what you said makes sense. And I don't think it's like patronizing. I think it's like a connection thing. I think like there's something real raw and authentic going on here. But anyways, regardless, I think what you said makes sense, and I'm excited to experience that.
Yeah, that's gonna be amazing. Are you a Paris guy? You strike me as a Paris guy, like a guy who really fucks with Paris, because I imagine you've been before, right?
Dude, I've been to Paris once, but I was like mad young, so I don't remember shit.
Oh, word? Oh, damn. No, you just made me even more excited for you for this tour. You got to go to Paris again? I was an adult? Oh, shit.
Now I go to Paris as an adult. The best part about life is being an adult, bro.
Yo, it is so. Isn't it amazing?
It's kind of lit, man. You do all the
It,
shit you wanted to do
yeah.
as a kid.
Oh my God, you could stay up at 1 a.m.
But
and no one
couldn't.
could tell you anything.
Nobody could tell you shit. But I'll still be in bed at 10, though. I tell you that much. But now it's by choice.